Hi, and welcome to Song Divers, an interview podcast about singer-songwriters.
We like to go deep in conversation with our favorite musicians in search of honest answers.
What are the ingredients of a great song?
What makes a songwriter tick?
Can a musician make a living these days?
Is Jason Isbell overrated?
What?
My name is Stefan.
And this is Ed.
We're kicking off 2020 with a musician and songwriter that embodies so much of what this show is about. It only seems right that we start this episode by officially saying a sincere Happy New Year. We don't have any long look back planned for you, just getting right down to more of what we all love, the interviews and performances.
But we would be remiss not to take a moment to say thank you for listening in 2019. Our first year was so much more than we could have hoped for. We released 23 episodes, won a Best of the Bay Critics' Choice Award, and you brought us over 30,000 listens between streaming and syndication.
In 2020, we're going to do everything we can to bring you more sincere, thoughtful, and unique interviews, performances, and perspectives with songwriters and musicians that are nationally relevant, but always through a lens that weaves their impact or influence into the music scene and community here in our hometown. And if we've done our jobs, hopefully in your hometown too. A new year means an awesome list of new shows and tours to go see. Nathaniel Rateliff has a new record out and is touring on it. Lyle Lovett, Andrew Bird, Brittany Howard are all out on the road. If you're local, we love our venues and always recommend following Ruth Eckert Hall for some of the finest acts that will come through our local market. And we have a fun string of guests lined up for this year that we're really excited about. Your host, Truly, will be out on the road and releasing new music this year, too. Ed has some solo stuff in the works that is so painfully good that I now hate him. And you'll see some shows, music, and other stuff fun coming from Mercy McCoy this year. You know who else is putting out new music?
Hey, everybody. This is Brian Sutherland.
You said I'm not the kind to keep your interest as you're walking away in that dress. You said you can't keep up with me.
Every year, songwriters' festivals are happening all over the world, with a critical mass happening here in the U.S. These are the Dripping Springs of Austin and the 30A Songwriters Fest happening next weekend in Florida's Panhandle. These are meant to be different from a traditional music fest in that they focus on storytelling, and they attempt to create an environment for the focus to be on the song. The fall of 2019 in our market brought us the first official downtown St. Petersburg Songwriters Fest. The weekend was full of local and national songwriters showcasing their storytelling. We saw previous Song Divers guests like Nashville's Lydia Luce and St. Pete's Rebecca Pulley, and we saw a lot of other notable writers that we'll likely see on the show in the coming months. Standing next to you, if I get the chance to. Brian Sutherland is every bit of what Song Divers is about. The guy is a musical Swiss Army knife. Brian is a trained cellist, turned guitarist, turned bandleader from Florida, now residing in Nashville. And he spent time on tour playing alongside some really notable acts, including the Beach Boys. His resume is impressive, but it doesn't prepare you for the knock-your-socks-off songwriting that Brian is cranking out. I got to spend some time with Brian throughout the weekend prior to us sitting down with him, and they don't come better, more natural, or more fun than a guy like him. When we recorded this episode, Brian had just finished his last slot at the Songwriters Fest here in town, as well as a private gig over that weekend, and he filled in for a festival no-show. To say his voice was raw would be a bit of an understatement, yet it's all the better for it. Brian was full of feeling, emotion, and conviction, and we wouldn't have had him tell us his story any other way. Divers, meet Brian Sutherland.
Brian, we usually start everybody. Tell us about where you're from, man. Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Fort Myers, Florida. I grew up in Fort Myers. I left there in 2007 when I graduated high school, and I ended up in Lakeland, Florida, at Florida Southern College, studying cello. I was there for four and a half years in college. I ended up meeting my wife there. We ended up staying in Lakeland until 2017, and I moved. We both moved to Nashville in 2017, right after Hurricane Irma hit. October 1st.
Your wife a music student as well?
No, she's not. No, okay. She is the best sounding board I've ever met in my life, but she is not a musician, strictly speaking.
Okay.
And did you grow up with a big family, parents musical? Tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
I'm the youngest of three. My brother, well, I, first of all, no is the answer to the question you asked. I do not come from a giant family, and I do not come from a musical family whatsoever. My my dad was a mechanic. My mom owns a restaurant and beef jerky outlet.
A beef jerky outlet?
Yeah.
No, as in like a place where the beef jerky that didn't sell at the normal store goes? Like a normal outlet?
Moving right along. No, yeah, it's I don't think it's that kind of outlet. I think it's just designed as like a dedicated beef jerky store.
Oh, I see.
I think yes. is what outlet mm-hmm. translates there.
Got it.
Is it in Fort Myers?
It is in Fort Myers. Okay. Yeah. And it's named very uniquely the Fort Myers Beef Jerky Outlet.
On the nose.
Yeah, right there.
Does it say factory seconds on the, never mind.
That's in the back.
I'm cutting this out.
My brother was a track star. He was like fifth in the state in cross country. My sister was a traveling softball player. I couldn't run a mile without wheezing until I was in college. So,
is that because you stopped running when you got to college?
It was people stopped chasing me. Yeah, that's really what the biggest deal was, I guess.
So where did music come in? Was there a lot of music in the household? Were your parents musical, or did they have you doing lessons?
They weren't musical in the, I guess they weren't musical in the sense that they played, but they listened to music. My dad always listened to country music, and my mom always listened to disco, and a little bit of classic rock.
A healthy blend.
And I got a harmonica when I was like 10 from Cracker Barrel, and I figured out how to play a song that was on the radio on the way home, and they were like, oh, maybe he's good at that, you know. And I started playing music in sixth grade, and it's kind of just to get out of PE.
And did you start with cello?
I started cello and guitar the same day, actually. I started in an orchestra, and then they announced that they were going to do a guitar program after school, and I was like, well, yes.
A little both.
Sign me up, you know. So, yeah.
And did you take to one instrument more?
I think I naturally gravitated towards guitar. I think it was easier for me to communicate quicker with guitar. I think in the first year of growth, I think guitar is a much easier instrument to create noise on. Cello, without frets and with a bow, it's a little more mechanical, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So guitar felt easier from the beginning.
In the song you learn on harmonica, and this is kind of an extended question of what you were hearing on the radio and stuff, what was the music?
It was Ricky Martin.
Yeah, okay.
It was Ricky Martin. I'll be very clear about that. It was Livin' La Vida Loca.
Which is everyone's favorite harmonica song.
It's in G, okay? I don't know what to tell you.
Well, that was pretty serendipitous that it was in the right key.
Thank goodness, right?
Harmonica, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so. Golly. Yeah, that was God. We'll give that one to God.
Yeah. What was your first? What was your first foray into songwriting?
Oh man, I met a guy in high school named Sam Faust, and Sam was a guitar player, and he wanted to write, and he had an idea for a song, I think, and I don't know if I wrote it or he. I can't remember how the song came about, but we wrote a song together called "With Me." And that was kind of the first song, and I was like, oh, this is cool. I can create this, you know, and I feel like connected to it, if that makes sense. And then it was just from there, it's been, you know, downhill.
So in talking to you a little bit, you know, over the last couple of days, and we'll get to the Songwriters Fest and all the awesome things that we go on this weekend, but you know, spirituality is a little bit thread through some of your background, certainly.
Yeah.
Were you around you know, worship bands, anything like that? Was that part of your upbringing, stuff like that?
In college, yeah. So I helped lead worship at my college, and that's really the only. I played cello for some Catholic services when I was growing up. I grew up Catholic, so I played cello for those. And yeah, so I mean, I guess.
Well, I asked the question because
I didn't do like the Bible study, I didn't do the camps and stuff like that. Like,
more what I meant was, routinely one of the places that people are able to cut their teeth playing with other songwriters are, you know, the Wayward Open Mic Nights, where they just do an open jam, or where you're having to learn stuff really quickly with a worship band. You're playing with different artists all the time, and it's a really good. I've seen that be a through line of people that have the ability to get up on stage, pick up a song quickly, and gel with a group. That's something we've seen.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I asked the question, knowing that was a little bit part of your...
Yeah, I think I never knew that. I never got to know that because the college at least had a set kind of group. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So you're always working with the same people for the year. But my first gigs were playing at a Amish ice cream parlor for a crowd that very much didn't want to hear it. Hear me play Oasis for 3 hours on an Ovation guitar that wasn't in tune. But I think when I got into playing bars, that kind of cut my teeth really quickly. So I played at a Jimmy Buffett bar, Cheeseburger in Paradise, which was tons of fun, boatloads of fun.
We won't comment.
We won't comment.
Irony?
Irony, maybe. every hour on the hour, no matter what you were doing, okay, no matter what you were playing or where you were in the restaurant, if you were playing on the hour, it'd click, a bell would go off, and you would have to be on stage to go,
blew out my flip-flop,
and start their song.
But that is why so many news stories start, and a Florida man.
Yeah. In local news.
Yeah.
Florida man throws alligator at his wife.
Because they were driven to insanity. Yeah.
Thanks, Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
I stepped on a pop-top.
Yep.
Threw an alligator at my wife.
It's a real shame. So you mentioned Sam, I think was his name.
Yeah.
So when did you kind of decide you wanted to have an artistic voice and start doing some real writing? Because, and we'll go ahead and say, so this weekend here in St. Pete, we had the first year of the Downtown St. Petersburg Songwriters Festival.
Yeah.
To different varying degrees of success, but overall a success, I would say. There's a lot of really great songwriters here. Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely want to get your take on it. But throughout the weekend, you know, a lot of songwriters, for anybody that's new to songwriters festivals, actually, Brian, you're a good spokesperson for these things because you were explaining it to the crowds, if you want to just give listeners a good idea of what songwriters festivals generally are.
Okay. So songwriters festival in and of itself is very simple. It's being in a public space and listening to songwriters explain where their songs come from and then perform them. So if, say, you're a modern country fan, you really like Keith Urban, you really like Brad Paisley or something. Brad Paisley's not a good example. If you like Keith Urban or you like pop country, whatever, most of the songs that you hear on the radio are not written by the artists who are performing them. They're written by songwriters in a room that meet, you know, Monday through Friday, just like you would your regular job. And we check into a job and we write songs. That's what we do. And these events are great because they kind of let the listener in on what the song's actually about and the story of how it came up. There's a good example here. A friend of mine named Clint Daniels, he wrote a song called She Ain't In It for John Party. I don't know if you know who John mm-hmm. Party is. So John Party cut this song called She Ain't In It. Well, the song's very simple. It's a guy's friends telling him that they want him to come back out and hang out with them, and him saying, look, I'll go anywhere you want to go. I'll go to any bar you want to go to as long as she ain't in it. Okay, it's a very, very simple hook. The idea came from Clint running into this woman in Midtown Nashville who is just kind of giving him a hard time about stuff and was aggravating. And so he went to this bar. He ended up leaving that bar and went to another bar. And he was standing outside two bars. One's called Winners. The other is called Losers. And a buddy of his says, hey, man, which one you want to go to tonight? Because they're very different bars, but they are connected. And he said, man, I don't care which one we go to as long as she ain't in it. And that's where that song came from. Mm-hmm. So he could tell that story and then perform the song. And now you as a listener, you know it. You have ownership over it. You feel like you were part of it, you know. So these festivals are designed to bring songwriters to the crowds and let them hear, you know, the truth of where these songs come from, associate them with a different name, support these artists, and I don't know, see live music in a different way.
So that last part you said is really important because I think format is an important thing too. People, just in general, you know, you see just consumer behavior. People are craving experience more, right? And so not only that, when you take it to music, you're consuming music from so many different angles. It's so easy to get. Now it's streaming. You're not even necessarily conscious of who you're listening to. It's just in a playlist. But then to be able to go and see, you know, a listening room style event, that intimacy with a singer-songwriter, that's part of the format of these festivals too, yeah. Generally. So Joshua Riley is a great singer-songwriter from the area. He was out with another guy, Dean Johannesson, who's another great singer-songwriter. Oh, yeah. So they were out at Dripping Springs. So Dripping Springs is another one outside of Austin, Texas. Similar format. And I think what's also important, because we're just coming from one of your shows with another great singer-songwriter that many people will know, but you're playing generally in either in what's called in the round, or you're playing as a duo and you're going back and forth songs with another songwriter. Yeah, song swap with another songwriter, which is a really cool format in which to see it. And if you're lucky and the people on stage either know each other, which you and Dave did at this last performance, or the people start to gel, you start to get harmonies that have never happened before. You hear little leads come in here and there. And there's some really cool magical things that happen if the mood's right and the venue's right and the audience is right, that aren't going to happen generally at a concert.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you're seeing actual reaction, you know, and it's kind of like catching lightning in a bottle. In a lot of ways, it can be. Sometimes it's harder than others. But for Dave and I, like, I know Dave really well. I've played with him for years.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and just give an intro of who Dave is?
So Dave is a very good friend of mine. His name is Dave Fenley. He is a Nashville-based, Texas-born artist, writer, and musician. And he was on season 14, I believe, of The Voice. He was in the top 10. He was on Team Blake. And he's one of the most gifted songwriters I've ever met, in that, like I said before, I believe him. When he sings, there's a lot of writers when I hear him, I think, oh, that's a clever word, or you really thought about how this line fits. He could have an obtuse sounding line, and I'd still believe him. Mm-hmm. You know, he could sing me the phone book. So.
He sings with conviction, but like this, I think the comparison I made was Chris Stapleton type of voice that just like it. You feel like this grizz of experience in their vocal cords. You know, like it must be true. They must have experienced this,
right? Yeah. And he's singing about nothing that he ever lived through, but he's just like, yeah, no, yeah, I believe you.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you got to perform with a bunch of great singer-songwriters throughout the weekend. A lot of them are here. We had, you know, a bunch of past guests for the listeners that follow us on social media. Lydia Luce was here, who's one of our past guests, who we're a huge fan of.
I love Lydia.
Excellent. Rebecca Pulley is playing this weekend, another previous guest who's super excellent. A lot of great singer-songwriters locally, and then a lot from around the country. Mm-hmm. You're here from Nashville. Talk to us a little bit about your journey up to Nashville. You mentioned, you know, you were in Lakeland. You know, you'd been taking, you were doing cello, you were doing guitar, but when did you decide to make music your living?
I made music my living in 2010. I was still in college, and I had really, really cheap rent. but I needed, you know, I needed a job, and, you know, I knew a lot of songs. I could play a lot of songs. And playing on cello, I could play songs on cello and sing, and that's like tip fire, all right? And people will just tip the crap out of you for that. And so I got into playing wine bars. I got really good at what is that? Sweet pea, apple of my eye, and all that kind of music. And it worked out perfectly. I found a good voice there that I really liked.
You were doing Amos Lee on the cello?
I was doing Amos Lee on the cello. I did Bill Withers on cello. Oh.
Can you paint the whole picture for us? Like, were there any other accompanists?
So at first, it started, I was a cello major in school, and I'd been playing guitar, you know, 10 years by that point. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of doubling up. I was playing cello for some, I was playing guitar for some, I was singing. And then one of my best friends, Zach Rogers, he was playing upright bass with me. So it was a duo. It was either cello and upright bass or guitar and upright bass and with me singing.
Wow.
And it killed. It was great. It was tons of fun, you know. And it was easy because it wasn't Brown Eyed Girl. It wasn't the typical cover band thing. Mm-hmm. And so we got really good at that and honed it in. Ended up being a trio, then a quartet, and then a full band. And at its peak, it was a 5-piece band with indeed.
Five-piece bands are overwhelming for my
I know. They were overwhelming for me.
Yeah.
Was this the Brian Sutherland band?
This was the Brian Sutherland band. Yeah, we had a 5-piece band, and we would bring in guests as we need them. I did like a 4.5-hour Zydeco gig with hired guys. It was weird. We did a bunch of weird stuff. but I ended up getting shingles at like 26 from the stress of trying to maintain all this. And I mean, the doctor was very clear. He's just like, hey, you can't do what you do. Like, you need
maybe
to
a three piece, maybe a four piece, but a five piece, Brian, you're killing yourself. Yeah,
and slow down,
no,
guy. Yeah.
No accordion.
Yeah, no. Accordion.
Accordion and shingles don't mix.
No, accordion and shingles actually do mix. Right.
Yeah. Too well.
That's a cause and effect.
That is direct correlation.
So I was playing with the band and everything, and you know, I'd gotten to do some band leader roles where there were I was playing for a country band. I was playing cello, resonator, keyboard, mandolin, singing, tambourine, and something else for a country band in the area. I had more equipment than the drummer. It was the weirdest thing in the world.
I was just going to say, for listeners listening going, that's a lot of stuff. Part of that's you were classically trained.
I could jump around.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an important thing to note here.
Yeah. And it was my job was the utility guy. It was they had a guitar player, they had a bass player, they had a drummer, they had a singer. I was the guy that covered all the other sounds on the records, you know. And through doing that, I ended up getting calls from country artists would come down from Nashville. They'd play in Florida. They'd bring an opener with them, but the opener wouldn't have a band because they wouldn't have the budget. So they would call me and say, "Hey, can you put a band together for our opener?" And run the rehearsal, whatever, and just do the show. And I'd be like, yeah, I can do that.
I need to pause you there because that's a really important thing. So a lot of we have a mixed audience, right? Some people are listening because they just love the stories and they love music. Some people are listening because they are songwriters that are out there on their way. They're guys like you, Andrew Duhon, the Lydias. And then there's the people that are up and just starting. They love playing. They've had a few gigs. And they don't know what the roadmap should look like. And the roadmap's changing every day, too.
It should.
It's changing. So talk a little bit about when you say these guys heard about me and what was that actual process? Like how did these guys even know who you were? How did they find you?
Okay. Let's see. So I got hired for a country band to play first. While I was with the country band, I met a fiddle player.
And just through networking, that's how you ended up with the country band?
Yeah, just people in town. And I'd been wanting to get into country music a little bit. I didn't really know anything about it, but I wanted to get into it. And the band that I was playing for was playing a lot, and they were doing big show. They played House of Blues, and they were doing really cool stuff. And so I reached out to them and just said, "Hey, if you ever need something, holler. I'd love to play for you." And so they had this CD release at a bar in Lakeland called Boots and Buckles, which was you know, classic. And so I ended up playing for their CD release. And while I was in that, I met a violinist, and he ended up joining my band. He ended up being one of my best friends in the world and my business partner at the time. And through the relationship there, the bar owner I became very comfortable with and very close with, and he would get the call from the artist, and he would say, "Oh, well, I got a guy. If your opener needs a band, I got a guy. Mm-hmm. Just give him, you know, send him the files." And so they would hire me for that. That was kind of how that started. And that skill set, you know, you just kind of develop that skill set more and more and more.
But it's important because not all artists do develop that skill set and the ability to socialize and things. And because we joked about it this weekend, there is a, no offense to all of our listeners, but artists have a stereotypical flakiness to them. People think that about musicians, you know, and it's important to note that music's no different than any other job. You have to network. You have to be able to do the job.
Got to show up.
You know, you got to show up. Like, those are really important things, and you got to take your chances.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a balance between risk and reward, without a doubt.
As far as the nuts and bolts of working with these other musicians, like, how many of them would you say are kind of at your level of education and reading music, and like, how would you interact with these other musicians and kind of?
Well, I think the education side of it can be deceiving because scholastic education, collegiate education in music is a great and helpful tool. Mm-hmm. But there is that school of hard knocks thing where there are some guys that I've met that have never stepped foot in a classroom and are better musicians than I will ever be. You know,
that's what I'm curious about.
Like, in that regard, it's just not, it's experience. You know what I mean? It's
10,000 hours.
It's 10,000. Yeah. Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell. It's 10,000 hours, and it's, for me, it was a humbling thing. It was, okay, these guys know more than me, but my job is to be the liaison between the artist and them. So they may know more than me, but that just means that when I go to them, I just say, "Hey guys, what do you think about this? How would you want to approach this? You know, I don't play fiddle. How is a fiddle going to do this part?" Mm-hmm. and trust them and do that and uplift. And you, it's basically like a team leader. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you think about it like that, you, it's your responsibility to, I think, to know the music better than anyone when they walk in the door. You should be the most comfortable and the most knowledgeable with that set of music. So that if you hear something off, you can say so.
Right.
Or if you they want to add, you say, okay, yeah, cool. You know, or whatever the case may be. I think that's
that makes sense. Oh, yeah, your question. Yeah. You're not necessarily micromanaging every measure of every song.
No,
telling everybody what to do.
Right.
I was just curious about how you interacted with.
Yeah, I think you're avoiding train wrecks. That's you're basically just avoiding big catastrophes, and you're trusting your guys. You know, if you've if you've hired people that you respect and that respect you, and respect the job, like respect the situation you're in. You know, everybody. We're not out to have a bad show. Everybody wants to have a good show. So if everyone kind of comes to the table like that, you can have great conversations about, you know, musical conversations. Like at the end of the chorus, we want to do a push here. We want to, the whole band's going to stop. We're going to let the singer do something. You know, how do we lift this singer? How do we make this singer look 10 times what they are, you know?
So how much of that experience do you think you got while you were still in Lakeland, like that you know, where you're called upon to do this thing, like pull together.
Because
it seems to me like this is something that later on in life you might not have necessarily envisioned that this would continue on.
Right.
In a professional capacity. But if I'm correct, it's a part of what you're
living. It's part
now.
Of what I do, yeah. So. I think the foundation blocks were there. I think that's what Lakeland's where I got my feet wet doing it. You know, I'd been running my band.
Right.
So I'd had the experience. I've had the artist experience where, you know, what does an artist want from a group? You know, what do I want as an artist? What do I want to be comfortable to do my job and to make sure, you know, everything's copacetic? So when I got to be the side man where I wasn't the artist and I didn't have to talk to the crowd every song and I didn't have to worry about the billboard that I'm putting forth, you know what I mean? If that makes sense, I could just worry about how do I make that guy awesome? How do I lift him? And how do we as a team lift that person? I think that was the most valuable lessons I learned came from Lakeland in that regard.
Well, I think while we're on learning and education, you were also teaching jazz guitar at some point while you were in school too.
I wasn't teaching jazz guitar. I was taking it was my minor. So
I was
doing schooling in it. I will be the first to denounce my ability to teach. I am not a very patient teacher. I wish that I was.
There's a difference between teaching and directing.
Well, I'm not teaching the band how to do their parts. I'm assuming that they did their homework, because I'm paying them.
Yeah.
You know, or because someone's paying them.
Sure.
Know? But teaching, I did teach for a minute, and it was the hardest thing I'll ever do. And I just don't have it. You know, I don't have that gift. You know, I envy those that do. It's amazing. It's a brilliant thing. And it's so important. Anyway, I digress.
So concurrently with this, you're also amassing, I'm assuming you're writing.
I am,
you're starting to build up a catalog of your own stuff.
Yeah.
So what was the progression there? Are you?
I got off there.
That's where we were going. Yeah, You're not doing your own band. You're now your band leading, and you're responsible for other people's
music. We're still in Lakeland, right?
Still in Lakeland.
So I'm running my own group. Mm-hmm. We're playing. I'm personally playing 200 to 300 dates a year.
Oh wow!
And I am hustling, working really, really hard to play every bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah from Arcadia to Gainesville.
Top 40 stuff and originals.
Everything under the sun. Cello gigs for weddings. We used to run a wedding thing where like I would play cello and the fiddle player would play violin for the ceremony. We put a jazz trio together for the cocktail. We'd play full band for the reception. I'd DJ in between sets. I'd MC the whole event. It was that kind of thing, and it was every weekend. You know, I did 36 weddings in 1 year.
You should have just gotten ordained, and then you could do the
ceremony. Exactly. Yeah. You're not the first person to tell me that. I didn't have a printer, so. But I think when the shingles thing happened, my wife Holly and I, we sat down and we were like, okay, something's got to change. You know, I can't do this. I was doing that many dates and I was like scraping 30 grand. You know, I was barely getting by. And so we said, I had been doing songwriters festivals through BMI. There's one in Fort Myers where I'm from, and I was technically a regional artist, so they brought me down and I did it, and it was amazing, and it was kind of a life-changing weekend. And through those connections, through the, just meeting people at the festival, I would play that. I ended up going down to Key West, and I did the one in Key West in 2016, and I kept doing Island Hopper. I did Dripping Springs twice. I actually met, funny enough, I think I met Dean in Dripping Springs, even though we lived this close to each other, you know. Josh I met, Joshua Riley I met out there too, same deal. And a couple other places. Tuscaloosa has one called the Druid City Songwriter Festival, or sorry, Black Warrior Songwriter Festival. Anyway, I would do those things, and I was like, well, this is an option. I can do this. I mean, I love writing, and I love talking. Why? What the heck am I doing? Why can't I do this? And so my wife and I started kind of thinking about it, and I started visiting Nashville. And I'd been touring through there every now and again and doing corporate things or whatever and visiting. And then we said, okay, well, we need to figure out how to do it. And we did. You know, I think that was the point that we moved. I was like, okay, I'm a writer. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to focus in on writing. I'm going to back off from playing so many gigs. I'm going to get my voice back, you know.
Did you go up there with, okay, I have a connection. I have something I'm going up for. You're going up. You just start feeling it out. See where it's open mic nights are out there. Start meeting people. Like, what was your foot in the door there, if there was one?
So I started with the songwriters festivals. When you're at those festivals, they're a vacation for the Nashville writers, right? So those guys are not, they're sitting by the pool most of the day when they're not playing, or they're playing and they're hanging, you know. But when you're staying at the same place they are, you hang, you spend time together, and you build a connection, and they see you play. And if they like what they see, well, then we'll have a conversation. And inevitably the conversation ends up with, well, hey man, whenever you're up in town, call me. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hang out. I'd love to write with you. And you would say, okay. Yeah. So my first connection with that was a guy named Frank Myers, and I'm going to go out on a limb. Do either of you know who Frank is?
I think you brought up the name to me at some point when we were talking pre-show, but otherwise, no.
Are you a country music fan?
Not really.
Did you ever hear of a duo called Baker and Myers?
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Okay. Yeah. Frank Myers. Okay. So Frank has written some of the biggest, just the biggest songs you've ever heard. Okay, I Swear for John Michael Montgomery, and then All for One from My Front Porch Looking In for Lone Star, and Tomorrow for Chris Young, and Everything with Crystal Gale, all these beautiful songs. The first time that I got to play a show for a Songwriters Festival as a member of the festival, like as a participant of the festival, was a side-by-side show with him. And at a sold-out show in Captiva Island with, you know, 400 people looking at us, and he's up here playing these just monster hits. I mean, hit after hit after hit. And I was like, oh, crap. You know.
Just immediately went to your Jimmy Buffett riff?
No. Yeah. No, so funny enough, he starts with this song, and he tells all these stories about how they kind of came about. And then I strummed a chord, and in the first chord, I busted a string. And I was just like, ah, no. I finished the song poorly. The crowd loved it. They took pity on me. I was very grateful for
that. That is very, yeah.
I changed my entire set of strings while he played his next song. And then we played the rest of it. And all my nerves were gone by that point. I was like, all right, I'd already lost it.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. What could go wrong?
You know? Exactly. Yeah, you got it out of the way.
And we had a blast the rest of the show. And when we got done, he was the first Nashville writer to be like, hey, you know, you got some really cool stuff. I would love to work with you, you know. Come when you come up, you call me. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's kind of where it started. From all the Songwriters Festivals I'd been doing and all the one-off events or whatever I would do, I would try and spend time with the writers as much as I could. And then when I moved to town, I had a short list of people to call and just say, hey, I, if you're available, can I write with you, or can we go grab coffee? And if they weren't available, they would say, you know, I can't, but I think you're, you know, I remember you, you know, it was great, da-da-da-da. This guy is available tomorrow. Go write with him. You know, and that's how it started.
And then inevitably, some of them are inevitably saying, hey, look, I got a gig going on, or I've got a house concert, or, and I'm assuming that's how that starts to happen, that you start to find opportunity.
Yeah.
And then at, you've been how long in Nashville now?
Just 2 years. Yeah.
And but you're still band leading, so you're able to figure that out, network that out as well. Yeah. And that's saying something in Nashville, especially because there's a million musicians.
There's so many.
So how did that come to be?
From doing writers rounds. So in Nashville, it's a very common place to have a bar and have four songwriters up on the stage and go, you sing a song and I sing a song and the next guy sings a song and the next guy sings.
Yeah, stuff like The Basement and Bluebird and things like that.
And I mean, and those are great. The Bluebird, if you can get into the Bluebird, wonderful. That's the church.
Mm-hmm.
But every bar there, from Tin Roof to all of the bars on Demumbrian and all the bars downtown and everything in East Nashville, there's never a shortage of writers to sit up and play you their songs. It's very normal. And from doing that, I play along when I'm playing with people. You know, I try and lift other people up. If I'm playing, I try and make their songs better, I try and help as much as I can.
Sure.
If I hear something. And you get comfortable. Writers get comfortable with you. If you do it a couple times, they're like, oh, okay. So he's a writer. So he knows kind of how that feels. And I'm comfortable with him. And I know he can play guitar. Well, this is logical. You just do it. I know you. Mm-hmm. You know. And so I started getting calls that way. And that has transformed into publishing companies that I know. I have a relationship with the people just from pitching them songs or whatever. And from tracking, from doing my own demos and recording my own guitar playing, they would say, okay, well, I have an artist I think you'd be a good fit for. Mm-hmm. Can you help? Can you do this? Here's the budget.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the pitching, too. So you're spending time in Nashville. You're band leading. You are playing writer's rounds and stuff. But you're also making ends meet. You alluded to, I don't want to be scraping 30 a year anymore. So you're making your living doing a multitude of different things.
Compound income, yeah.
Yeah, compound income. Are you playing cover gigs while you're up there, too?
I am.
Yeah,
I am.
Still grinding that piece, too, which a lot of people are doing.
It's part of it, yeah. I don't do it as much as I did here. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, you know, I don't play 5 nights a week now. I can play a couple nights a week and then offset it by doing cello sessions and by doing gigs with other artists, you know, lifting up.
But it's important to note too that doing that is, you know, we mentioned cutting your teeth, doing your 10,000 hours, like getting comfortable in front of people, but staying at it, like continuing to practice, because the voice is, I mean, it's not technically a muscle, but you have vocal cords that need to be practiced and you need to use them.
You'll lose it.
Yeah. And practicing builds it back up. And especially if you haven't had vocal coaching, because, you know, you can be taught a way to sing that preserves voice and all that stuff. But
I would like to figure that one out.
Yeah, wouldn't we all? But that's an important thing to note, too, that, you know, continuing to use your craft and use your, like, exercise the muscle, you know, in between getting to pitch a publishing company. But I think that's an important thing too, that in Nashville, for people who don't know, where all the writers go, there's Music Row and there's all these publishing
houses.
Yeah, exactly. And so talk a little bit about that, breaking into that. How do you get in front of those guys? What's that process like? From getting them to listen to you, are you submitting? Is it knowing people and getting them to give you a chance? And then when you're sitting in front of them, what is that actually like? Are you literally sitting with an acoustic guitar and playing to them?
I do a lot. Not everybody does that. And I've been told that. I want to preface this. I do not have a publishing deal. So I don't know. I only know up to a certain point kind of how it worked for me or how it's been working for me. So I get it from, I'll play a writer's round or I'll play a gig or something and I'll meet somebody, or I'll be at a networking event or a bar or something. You know, the bar's there. Every bar is a networking event. That's something that I've had to learn, because I'm not a big bar drinker, partier guy. But there's a lot of business that happens over a pint. That's just kind of the nature of our business.
Or bachelorette party or both.
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. on scooters.
Yeah.
Pedal taverns.
Yeah.
I have this like penis straw in my mind now. I can't get out of my mind.
Yeah, no, that is the universal symbol for bachelorette party, I believe.
Yeah, it is. and tutus. Anyway, so I would do these things and you know, I'd hang out with writers you try and surround yourself with people who are better at what you do than you are. Mm-hmm. And so I would hang out with these guys that I'd meet on the road or whatever, and he'd say, okay, well, hey, man, this is so-and-so from so-and-so publishing. Indie. He would say, you know, this is so-and-so from so-and-so publishing. And then he'd turn to the guy and go, you need to listen to this guy. And the guy would go, okay, well, let's set it up. What's your number? And he'd give my phone number, and I'd text him. We'd get a date, and I'd go into his office, and I'd play him four songs, three songs, whatever.
We're going to post all these numbers in the show notes for everybody.
555. But the I think the thing about the meetings that I learned was that not many people play anymore. They do demos. They play their demos, which is fine. That's great. I just didn't have the budget to make high quality demos. It's like $1,000 a demo, you know. And so I would just go in and play, and they stop you. You know, you get verse, chorus. And they're like, okay, next song. Thank you. You know, and it's kind of like an audition. It kind of feels like you get really good at like, oh yeah, they don't hate me. They're just, they have no time. That's right. You know, they're trying to hear as many songs as they can.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think it's interesting that if for anybody that's seen the movie Begin Again with Mark Ruffalo, in the beginning of the movie, he's an A&R guy and he's just going through discs, throwing them out his window. He listens to like half a verse and he's chucking out the window. And, you know, so, and I should also say for a living too, I work in marketing and sales. And so getting somebody's time and getting them to pay attention without you being in front of them is expensive and it's tough. And once you are in front of them, you have a limited amount of time to get across.
Yeah, use it.
To get across, exactly. Yeah. So, but that's interesting to me that they'll stop you and be like, okay, I get it. Keep moving.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're treating you like a CD player anyway.
Some of them want to hear the whole song, or some of them are moved and they want to hear what you got, or they don't know how to tell you to stop.
Yeah, which is great. I mean,
that, I've seen that too. And
you'll take it.
I'll get to the last verse and I'll be like, oh, they're not interested.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still going to finish the song.
I mean, I'm here. Yeah. I mean, so how do they end those meetings? It's like, okay, hey, listen, we, you know, there's an opportunity, or there's, you know.
No, it's rarely that. I mean, for me, it's never been that. It's been, that was great. Thank you so much for sharing. You know, keep sending me songs, and we'd love to, you know, keep this relationship going. The deal is that there's so many writers for so little positions. Mm-hmm. So one, they want to know you're going to stick around, right? They want to know that you're not going to run your lease out and then leave town, so they're going to put all this money in you and they're going to lose it. They want to know that you show up, and they audition you, whether you realize it or not, I think. They put you with their writers, and they say, you know, and they talk to their writers afterwards. How was he? How was she? Were they helpful? Did they have ideas? You know, what do you think? And it's all of that. You know, you're trying to build a relationship with these people. You're not just trying to make a quick sell. Because if you think about it, I think about a publishing house kind of like a family, you know what I mean? And you wouldn't just hire someone to be your brother, you know? No, you'd probably audition him a little bit.
Sure.
Make sure that he didn't fart in his sleep or something, you know?
Hey guys, this is Steph here, and I need to get something off my chest. The truth is, I have guitar playing insecurities. Pretty big ones. I mean, I can hold my own, but when I hear guys like Ed pick up a guitar, I realize quickly just how narrow my scope of knowledge truly is. My best friend, writing partner, and all-around guitar stud, Colin Ryan, confessed to me recently that he's been subscribing to True Fire to expand his musical vocabulary. I told Ed about it, and he was curious too. So we made a visit to True Fire's site and were blown away by how diverse and comprehensive True Fire's courses are. We were also really impressed by their educators too. Well-known musicians, Grammy winners, and touring performers. A few really cool ones that stood out to me were Luther Dickinson, the North Mississippi All-Stars, Dweezil Zappa, Sonny Landreth, and our guest, Ellis Paul. Any lingering reluctance to sign up was quickly extinguished when I learned that over 1 million guitar players from around the world are already using True Fire. I downloaded the app and I became one of them. So if you want to join us at any skill level, head over to songdivers.com/truefire to get started on our favorite musical education platform. I think another thing that's we should point out too is your now influences are coming from all over the place, right? Especially if you do land at a publishing house, you're hearing other writers.
Oh yeah.
You're hearing all the stuff that you're having to band lead for you personally. So you're having to get familiar with their music. Do you want to give a little bit of just insight into who you're band leading for right now?
No, not really. I'm it's not about that. You know, they're good artists. They're young artists. They're coming up.
So. Well, and I say for the point of like styles, right?
Oh yeah. So I work with a pop artist, a very young pop artist. She's 18 years old, just turned 18. She's had a few tracks on Radio Disney, and it's a very pop gig, which is very interesting because as a guitar player, there's not a whole lot for me to do in the track. So that's been fun. And then I'm working with a new artist now. It's also very young, 19. That's a country artist that we're getting. She's kind of getting off the ground, and we're going to be doing some stuff for her in the new year. And then I work with a duo, a country duo, that is a little more experienced. They play the Broadway thing. We do Broadway with them, and then they release. They're working on new records, and they're pitching. And then I have my own stuff. And then I'm actually working with a girl now who's also like a, I guess she's like a rock voice. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I think that's important too. What's your relationship to music as a listener now that you're in Nashville, and what has that been like? What do you listen to for fun? And are you somebody that just listens to listen? Can you, at this point, as deep into music as you are as a professional, can you just listen and enjoy it? Are you analyzing the whole time? Or do you, like, I'm going to listen to vintage jazz, like, when I want to listen to music?
If it's not Django, I'm not interested.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and are you, do you listen to certain things that draw influence? Like, talk a little bit about how that's impacting your songwriting.
So I think I still listen to the songwriters that moved me from the beginning. And for me, you know, John Mayer was what I grew up with. So that was a big part of my musical vocabulary.
And you can hear him and Mraz and guys like that in your stuff.
Jason Mraz, same deal. Jack Johnson, same deal. Pretty much anyone with a J.
But I also should say, too, like, it's your stuff's not radio pop either. There's a lot of depth to what you're writing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So I still listen to those records that moved me as a kid. And then a lot of what I listen to is, like, Wolfpack.
I love
and
Wolfpack.
Dynamo.
Love Wolfpack.
You know, that kind of Corey Wong is like my man. I love that stuff. And I do analyze it if I can. You know, my ear's not great, so I try and analyze it. It pushes my ear, which is great. But it's just funky and it's fun. I have a hard time listening to the radio. And I think that'll get better over time, maybe. But right now it's been very difficult.
And then I think another thing that's important too for where you're at and what you're doing in your career, you're writing very intentionally also. And I'm guessing here. But when I say that, a lot of the songwriters we have on, certainly they want people to enjoy what they're doing. When I'm writing, I want people to enjoy what I'm doing.
Of course, we all do.
But a lot of songwriters are writing to work through stuff, or you're writing
about for therapy.
You know, there's sure, it's a catharsis. Are you doing some of that, but are you also writing saying, I want to write this in a way that's going to fall, or I notice as I'm starting to write something, like, I know who I want to go pitch this to, or, you know, because there's more to it, you have a direct or a more immediate thing you're going to do with it?
I think when I write by myself, I take off any finish line. There's no end game in mind. It's a connect. If it doesn't move me, I'm not going to sing it. When I'm in a co-write, I'm trying to write the best song that we can. I don't think about it like, okay, this is a Carrie Underwood. Would Carrie sing this? I don't think like that. That would mess me up, I think. We just try and write the best song we can, you know, about... Do you guys do co-writes?
Ed's done a ton of co-writes. I've only done a couple.
Okay, so when you do co-write, you tend to pitch ideas out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if the idea moves you, right, then you write that idea.
Mm-hmm.
The trick there, the pitfall that I find hard to miss is that sometimes you write the one that you think is, like, you hear a hit hook and you're like, oh, this is gonna be cool. Or this is going to hit really good, or people are really going to like this, or this could be a hit or something like that, instead of, wow, I really resonate with this. Mm-hmm. You know, and I fall for that. And I'm quick to just be like, okay, yeah, let's do that one. Here we go. And then we're halfway through the song and I'm like, what the hell is this song about? You know, and I lose it. That's tough.
Are there conversations though about, like, okay, what is this song about? Do you, like, get to that level? Like, we have to figure out what the story is here.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Then, yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And some of them have very strict stories and some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I write by myself, I tend to write exactly the image in my mind. Right. So one of the songs that we were talking about earlier about a song to play was that you asked me about was called Just Like Us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Just Like Us is one of those songs that my wife's name is Holly.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, Holly.
I love you. You're really cool. We were at a breakfast joint. We just moved to Nashville, and we were at a breakfast joint called the Nashville Biscuit House, and we were having breakfast. It was a really, really busy dining room, and there was this beautiful couple, older couple, at the end of the dining room that was sitting there like it was their first date. They were looking into each other's eyes like it was their first date, and it was the sweetest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I said to Holly, like, I hope that when we're at that point in our life, that you still want to even, like, look at me, even with disdain, let alone, like, with love, and want to share a meal with me. And it was a weird moment, but it was like this super busy dining room of people that were, you know, rushing around trying. You could tell, you know, there's a buzz. Nashville has a natural buzz to it. So all these people are probably talking about, you know, what they're doing in their life and what they, you know, their producer said or something, some musical crap. And here's this beautiful couple that's just loving on each other, sitting there. And I had this idea that they were just this well-worn love letter that these two people were, and that I want to be like that. And I wrote this, you know, narrative in my mind of what their story was, that they met at a dance and he wanted to dance with her all night long. And right when the band leader finished a song, he said, you know, the last song was In a Sentimental Mood, and that's their song, and that's been their song for 50 years or whatever. And so I went home the next day. We went home that night and everything was fine. The next morning I woke up really early and I was sitting on my porch and I started writing this song. And I was part of a songwriting group at the time. Josh is in it, I think. I think he is. Do you know Abe Partridge and all them? The Dripping Springs crew? Maybe not. Okay.
We know of them.
Okay. So they do a songwriting group. They used to do a songwriting group where they give you a prompt every Monday.
Yes. And Josh was telling us about it.
And by Sunday you had to have it in. So the prompt was Get Born, which, if you've never heard that phrase, that's from a Bob Dylan song. And it's about just constantly recreate. You know what I mean? Get born, get new, get redo. So I was late for the songwriting group class, for the songwriting group turn in. So I was like trying to get the song written, and also I was writing this real song, and it just kind of happened serendipitously. So
remember what I said about songwriters earlier? Deadlines. Just kidding.
What is it, good for us or bad?
No, it was bad because it was like, it's like, you know, there's a stereotype that sometimes songwriters can be flaky. But in this case, it sounds like you were late because you just had to finish cranking it out.
Yeah, I didn't start it till the day was due.
I think Brian's I think
that's a personality trait.
Brian's the kind of artist that responds well to pressure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Writing under pressure.
Yeah, no, I do my best work when I have to learn something in 3 days.
I'm going to preface this one that Brian played this earlier during your last set of the Songwriters Fest with Dave that you mentioned. You guys were in the middle of a...
Yeah, can I trouble you guys for some more water in a minute?
Yeah. You guys were playing in the middle of a sports bar.
Thank you so much.
Which people were listening. They were totally good. But you've got TVs, you got games on, which is generally a soul-sucking thing. People were so into your guys' set. This tune, I won't speak for anybody else, I squeezed a few tears out during this.
Oh,
one.
It's
so touching. I mean, it's such a great tune. And the way you paint the picture, and we'll let everybody hear it.
It's so funny. I watched a video the other day that said... there's an artist that said... Playing music's really interesting. If you see someone in like life, if you just see someone in the world crying, what's your first response?
That they're sad.
And what do you want to do? You want to help them stop crying,
console
right?
Console them, yes.
As a musician...
I was going to say, laugh at them.
No. As a musician, if you see someone crying while you're playing, you're like, all right, I'm going in.
Yeah.
You're about to bawl.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh,
it's
no.
The funniest dichotomy.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, we talked a little bit about the experience of an intimate setting earlier, and like that's the time you're ready to receive that message as an audience.
Yeah.
Not when you're standing in a sports bar, but that's just to speak to, you know, you cut through.
Yeah. So this is that song I was talking to you about. It's called Just Like Us. Sunday morning, lovers flirting, sitting in the corner booth, quietly smiling, eyes loving on each other. We could feel it clear across the room. A well-worn love letter, patchwork life that could only be built with time. Alone in a crowd, chock full, filled with other people, scrambling to fill their lives. So baby, that can be just like us. You're loving each other so true. Warm embrace, good old mixtape, playing all your favorite tunes, and keeping it together through the wind and the weather, like a home we built on trust.
all our lives in the arms of each other, babe. That could be just like us. Late night swaying band starts playing, laying down that perfect groove. He'd been waiting to hold her, she couldn't be closer, even if he wanted her to. Well, the last corner rings and the front man sings, I've only got eyes for you. 50 years swaying to their first dance song, in a sentimental mood. So baby, that can be just like us, you're loving each other so true. Warm embrace like an old mixtape, playing all your favorite tunes, yeah. And keeping it together through the wind and the weather, like a home we built on trust. All our lives in the arms of each other, babe. That could be just like us. That could be just like us. Rewriting the book on love, starting all over a new turn, and heating out the words get born. And brand new eyes, living out a brand new life, remade for your own heart, and ours could be a brand new start. So baby, that can be just like us, loving each other so true. Home embrace, good old mixtape, playing all your favorite tunes. Keeping it together through the wind and the weather, like a home we built on trust. All our lives in the arms of each other, babe. That could be just like us. And all our lives in the arms of each other, babe. That could be just like us. That could be just like us.
Very nice.
Why didn't you play that one for the publishing company?
I did. I did play that for the publishing company.
Those idiots.
I have to say, no, I know that you did because you made a comment.
I thought you were going to bring this up.
Yeah, man. And I thought that was so funny because I'm like, that's my favorite chord change in the whole song.
For the listeners that don't know,
I played that for I pitched that song to a publisher when I first moved to town. And they said, man, I really love that song. It hits on all the chords you need to hit, and it hits on all the spots, and it really hits right in the feels. But if it weren't for that satanic chord, I'm telling you what, that satanic chord there in the bridge really ruined it for me.
Yeah,
I thought that was cool, hilarious. Bro. Have a great day.
It's a great song. Keep pitching that one, obviously.
That's a beautiful song. I'm not going to pitch it anymore. I'm releasing it in January. So I'm going to keep it.
Even better.
Obviously these guys know what they're looking for, but I just...
They don't, though.
I was going to say they think they do, but I just hate that mindset.
Yeah.
It's like, you played a seventh chord there. Not that that chord is a seventh chord.
No, a secondary dominant.
I mean, you went... No, but what I'm saying is like you played more than six chords.
Right.
You shouldn't have done
that. Yeah, that's not a G major chord.
Right.
Guy.
Well, in the human brain... responds to certain chords like they do to colors, but at the same time, I mean, a great song is a great song, and the staying power of that, people are gonna resonate, you know?
Yeah. I agree with you there, but there's a reason that this is so iconic. Like, there's a reason you know what that song is. You know what I mean?
And to you, what's that reason?
They didn't call that satanic.
No, they didn't.
They called it a million-dollar song.
Yes.
Yes. Not that my song is compared to Friends in Low Places. That's a long conversation. No.
No, but for a lot of our listeners, they're going to hear that. And for any of our listeners that do still listen to the radio, they're going to go, "What? That's easily better than 75% of the songs I hear on the radio
right now.
Oh,
that's very kind.
You know?
Thank
you.
Wow.
What the hell? You know, what is it they're looking for?
What gives,
it's confusing.
John?
Yeah. But I think, too, you know, in that we mentioned Lydia earlier, you know, a lot of her songwriting she was talking about earlier, and you talked about this, too. You're writing a narrative. Some little thing sparked an idea, and you're writing this complete fantasy narrative that's, you know, some hopeful, some fantasy, some just, you know, cinematic almost a little bit too, the way you're painting a picture in that.
Yeah, ideally it's painting. You know, it's exactly painting, I've always thought. And Lydia is one of those that has that, she's got such a timeless voice, mm-hmm. such an ageless voice.
Yeah.
She could sing a hip hop song and I would be like, gosh, that sounds like the Andrews Sisters. You know, mm-hmm. it's one of those kind of things.
So that one that you just played for us, Just Like Us, is that a more recent one you've written? Or
I wrote that on October 2nd, 2017.
Okay. So we got to hear some really cool stuff that you played throughout the week. And you switched it up, did a bunch of different things. Another one I really liked that you're going to have to tell us whether your voice is able to do it.
I'll try it, but if it sucks, we just won't post it.
But a tune called Broken In.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I'll do it.
Can I interrupt just for 1 minute?
Do whatever you need.
I want to rewind just a few minutes ago. Okay. How do you know it was written on October 2nd, 2017?
Because I moved on October 1st.
Okay, the day after you moved.
Yeah, we went to breakfast the next day.
Just curious.
Yeah, I'm really weird about dates, too.
I didn't know if you... I'm terrible at dates.
I can't remember my own birthday.
But
that's something that... if you get to know me for any long period of time,
that's going to happen. I'll know this everything about you eventually.
Perfect.
So,
you and the NSA, buddy. Yeah. I'm really weird about dates, numbers and dates. Like I just remember them, and I don't celebrate them really, but they mean something to me. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm a weird human being.
I thought maybe you kept very detailed, copious notes on every song and edit of a song that you do.
Well, as you're tuning there too, talking about songwriting, are you a journaler? Are you writing stuff down? A lot of memory stuff. You just napkin scrapping. What's happening?
Napkin scrapping. I love that. No, so I run a lot of my song lyrics come through, you know, notepad on your phone or mm-hmm, on your computer. Mm-hmm. A journal. I go through periods of journaling where I'm like, for 2 weeks, I'm a dedicated get up in the morning and do my morning pages. And then for the rest of my life, I'm not, you know.
Morning pages is a reference to Julia Cameron and the Artist's Way, right? Yeah. Okay. Interesting. How long have you been subscribing to that? You do that?
I started listening to podcasts a couple of years ago with Brian Koppelman called...
Mm-hmm. The Moment.
The Moment. Thank you. And he was talking about it.
Okay.
I was like, oh, okay, I'll check this out. And then he was talking about, I think it's Stephen Presswood's The War of Art. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And talking about resistance.
This is so funny because we had this conversation with a guy in Seattle.
James Anaya?
A guest we had on the show.
Oh,
James Anaya, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So
he incorporated some of the stuff from the book. He had a lyric that was directly from there, I think.
He mentioned resistance in a lyric, and I asked him, did you read Stephen Pressfield, you know, so...
He was like, yeah, I did, yeah.
Thank you for understanding.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's the best feeling in the world.
When someone finds an Easter egg that in a tune, you know, it's great if they're listening at all, but heaven forbid they actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they glean something.
Right.
Yeah.
So War of Art and The Artist's Way kind of...
So I started doing... I tried to get through the morning pages thing, and I am a morning person, but I guess... I did it until I felt like I was comfortably creative. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if I went through a period where I wasn't writing a lot because I was playing a lot or I was doing something else or whatever, I would do the morning pages. And then once I got back to, you know, writing 5 songs a week, then I didn't necessarily need to be up at 5 a.m. doing 3 pages freehand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Setting a timer and then throwing it away.
All right, you're going to do...
Broken In. Tell us a little bit about this one. This is another one that really stuck out to me as you're going through the rounds.
God, I hope I can sing it. There's another guy, speaking of The Voice, another guy that was a finalist on The Voice, his name is Blessing Offer. If you have a chance, I'm just telling you, if you have a chance to get with Blessing or to hear him play, cancel every plan you have and go see him. He's unbelievable. And his heart is the size of the world. It's unbelievable. And I met him in Key West. He is a singer-songwriter, pianist, now a guitarist. He lives in Nashville. And I met him in Key West at a party for the Songwriter Festival there. And we exchanged numbers. And when I got to Nashville, we started writing. And this was the second or third song that we wrote together. he's got a kind of a background in jazz a little bit, and we both love that style of music, so we hit it off immediately. And we wrote it with Vanessa Olivares, who is from a band called Granville Automatic, and they do a lot of like what's the word I'm looking for? Concept records, where like they did a Nashville haunted record where they did songs about the haunted buildings stories in Nashville, stories about the haunted stories in Nashville, which is really cool. And she came in with the idea, actually. Vanessa came in with the idea of, we're not broken, we're just broken in. And so we talked about it for a minute, and then we just started in on a groove, and we just wrote it. And we, as they say, you write it to the wall. It was just, it was done, you know. It was one of those lyrics, I think all those lyrics, we didn't even write in pencil. We just wrote them in Sharpie, pretty much, you know. So, yeah.
And as people are listening to this, too, there's a huge pop sensibility to everything you're writing that could go you know, it's certainly all extremely radio friendly. But for those that can't see his fingers, like, definitely take a listen closely. There's a lot of flourishes. Like, there's some serious guitar playing. These aren't just four chord tunes.
There's only three chords in this song.
But one of the cool things about, again, seeing a lot of songwriters, we have a lot of great guitar players come through this room. You're moving all up and down the neck, almost like a classical guitar player with some of these things, the way that you're approaching these chords. And I think that adds a lot of color to some of these songs that would otherwise be even more straightforward.
I think you're right. You know, and we wrote them like that. I think it's different when you write the song with those parts. You know, I go back to John Mayer because it's what I know. You know, if you heard him do let me think of how that right, so mm-hmm. if he was to play that whole part, which is still technically the same chord, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't hold nearly the weight of you know, it holds an entirely different weight when you mm-hmm. add those parts that are written in. And that's, yeah, so anyway. Broken In. Lower than I normally sing it. Horses of goodness. Here we go, let's see. Just like a fixer-upper house becomes a home. Like a brand new couch ain't right till it gets a little old. And nothing ever fits as good as your favorite shoes. Ain't never had a kiss feel like the way that you do. We're not broken, we're just broken in. And we're not perfect, but we get there every now and then. Everybody wanna know why we keep going back again. Yes, cause we're not broken, we're just broken in. It's broken, broken in. It's cause we're not broken, we're just broken in. Yeah, some mistakes, a lot of love, that's what we're making. Though the edges get rough, you know we'll take them. And it might not be right now, but be patient. Cause if you find what works, why would you change it? Why would you change it? We're not broken, we're just broken in. We're not perfect, but we get there every now and then. Everybody wanna know why we keep going back again. It's cause we're not broken, we just broken in. It's broken, broken in. It's cause we're not broken, we're broken in. It's broken, broken in. Cause we're not broken, we just broken in. And it might not be right
right now, but be patient. Time is gonna work it out, just keep it waiting. And it might not be right right now, but be patient. You be patient, no. Cause if you find what works, why would you change it? Why would you change it? Oh, we're not broken, we're just broken in. And we're not perfect, but we get there every now and then. Not everybody wanna know why we keep going back again. It's cause we're not broken, we're just broken in. It's broken, broken in. It's cause we're not broken, we're just broken in. It's broken, broken in. It's cause we're not broken, we're just broken in.
Nice.
Good job. It was on the rails there, but you, thanks. You held on, man.
I try to do some different stuff, too.
Oh, man. That's great.
I think
that's
the beauty of doing these acoustic things is, like, these songs are still, because they're not released, they're still really kind of being birthed in a lot of ways. The arrangements are always fluid, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I have that song recorded with a full band, and it's a thing, and it's cool as heck. But it's not out yet, so y'all.
I was just gonna say,
y'all don't know it, so it's good.
Yeah,
oh, it comes out January 17th.
Okay.
So you usually do a where's the capo usually? Because you did it in a
or did you
lower
just
key,
down?
Or did you just?
I tuned down, a whole step. Gotcha. So usually it's a A minor, a key of C.
Right,
so,
right.
Then it was the key of B flat.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the key of Ow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for powering through it because that was great.
I loved
thanks.
It. Yeah.
Thanks, man. It's, like it I said, I'll send cool. you the recordings of it.
Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff when you were going down and hitting the... I wasn't watching your fingers, but when you're hitting the low fretted
mm-hmm. the
chords, like it's an F, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds yeah. good in that lower tuning.
Well, and part of the kind of my background doing the jazz stuff mm-hmm. was I always really loved bass lines.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a really cool bass line. So like Blue Skies was always one of those... blue skies smiling at me. That like walking thing.
Nothing but blue skies.
Yeah. All that. Yeah. I love that. So it's, when I
speaking
would,
of Django, that's real Django-y.
Yeah, it can be. It can be. Yeah. When with Broken In, when I normally play it, it's like that. Sloppy, but you get kind of get the point on that. It's,
yeah,
I love that. I don't know. People,
there's a lot going on there, but I think too, just it's there's a lot of different approaches to chording and the way you mm-hmm. you know you look at something depending on you know what you're brought up and what you learn first from a music perspective is what you listen to. But you got an ear for it too, because one of the things that I noticed what was going on with Dave. So you guys were in a situation where you guys knew each other, you played together before. You were comfortable with each other's songs and you were complimenting, like you talked about earlier. You were stepping in and there were some harmonies. One of the things I noticed is hitting his second verses, you were laying in bass lines on the guitar, mm-hmm. which was like it changed the dynamic, and all of a sudden you're in a new dynamic and a new, you know, a new phase of the song that's exactly, yeah.
Built.
That is evolved, you yeah. know. And now you've added some new flavor to the listener's ear and the palate's mm-hmm. grown, so that's a really important thing, and you're hearing it in your own tune.
That means sure. the world to me that you notice that. I have to tell you, like, that's no, the candy's it, the reason I do it. So
it really made a difference in that room, too.
Did it?
Yeah. Because,
that's a hard room, wasn't it?
Yeah, and his guitar, it wasn't always easy to hear what he was trying to articulate.
For such a big dude. Something. Dave's a big dude, and he yeah. was playing a traveling guild.
Yeah.
You know, one of
those quarter size guild.
Yeah, they're which are great guitars.
Oh, yeah.
But
well, and there's
point,
like
in a room.
There's like compression and gate and stuff that we yeah. had no control over
right.
that squeezed the
I guess my point is that to I'm agreeing with Stefan, like when you were laying those bass lines in, it really helped the song pop out,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
Noticeably.
It was like a drum set was just going to drop in out of nowhere and it was like, "Oh, this thing's it's
going
to develop
yeah, we're
right
going.
Here in front
here
of
we
us.
Go.
Yeah, here it's coming."
And then, but on the flip side, when he was doing some beatbox stuff on
changed
your stuff,
the whole game, man.
It was really fun. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I love
that. We'll get Dave on here some.
He's
some
actually
point.
Pretty good at that.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, he's further than that, man. He's unbelievable.
And I think it it's wasn't just a gimmick either. It kind of really helped propel your song in certain sections. Like he'd bring it in to kind of take it up a notch. Yeah,
and that it's the cool. The first song that I played tonight is a song called Back to You, and we did that the first time that we performed that was not long ago, maybe a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And he did it the first time that we played it. He did beat, and I was just like, I need it.
I'm like, will you just travel around with me and do that?
Well, I was like, hey, I'm going to record an acoustic version of this. Can you beatbox and give me a beat for it? And he was like, absolutely. So
he's like, I'll travel with you, but I'm not sleeping in a twin.
I ain't sleeping in a twin. No, I ain't above that.
So, Brian, you're talking about these songs are going to get released early next year, which I'm now excited about.
So January 17th is the release date. Is that official?
That is fluid. I have a CD release.
Brian's studiously checking his calendar.
Sorry, no, I'm checking. My wife's texting me.
Oh, well,
that's you answer your
you
wife's
answered,
text.
Yes.
Okay?
Yep. Happy wife, happy life.
Call her up. Get her on the show here.
She would. She would in a heartbeat. She would totally, and she'd throw me right under the bus. He's not an artist. He's a hack. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Oh, the release. Yeah. I thought you were going to a school trip.
I thought you were down the street. Would you get the cigarettes already?
Yeah, yeah. Damn it.
So I have a CD release January 17th in Lakeland, Florida, at a venue there called Union Hall. I'm bringing a band from Nashville. We're going to play the record. And y'all are welcome. Please come out, please.
January 17th. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be sick that day, actually, I think.
Cool. So perfect. Yeah. I'm sick.
Oh, that's that day we're both sick.
Yeah.
Dang. Well, just so happens on the 16th. I'll be in Fort Myers.
So I'm assuming Lakeland because you've got a huge family and fan base there.
I've got no family, but yeah, I've got my friends are there. And I've got a pretty decent following of really just good people. I don't know if you've ever spent any time there. Lakeland is a gem, man.
I know some people in that area.
Yeah. They're just good people. It's something in the water. Mercury. Yeah. No, it's not mercury.
It forces you together.
No, they're just good people, and they've loved me through every incarnation of music I've brought them, and have been very supportive, and I just want to keep giving back. I want to keep feeding that.
Yeah, we'll be there, man. Awesome. That's good, exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
So what does that look like for you then? And I asked this you're still going to be in Nashville.
Yeah.
Are you fronting a band in Nashville right now too? Is it just the Brian Sutherland Band project? Are you out playing your stuff?
Not really. I play writer's rounds. You know, the perks of playing, kind of being okay at guitar, is that I can go, I don't need a band to go do something. I can go do a writer's round or something and cover what I need to cover.
But to have your songs fully realized,
it really helps,
and play those to people.
So we do showcases up there. So I'll hire a band for the showcase, mm-hmm. and we'll rehearse the material. And I usually hire the same guy, so I know they kind of know what we're doing, and I'm comfortable with them. And then this trip is we're playing in Fort Myers on the 16th at the Barrel Room, and then the 17th will be Union Hall in Lakeland. The 18th, we have a private thing. And then the 19th, I'm doing a house concert in Gainesville with them. And then we go back up to Nashville. So it's a quick little 5-day trip, 4-day trip, whatever it is, just to share the new record and to get it out into people's hands.
Nice.
So and any specific hopes for what that turns into? Like, do you have ambitions to go out and be touring as Brian Sutherland Band or whatever incarnation of the band that takes?
I wouldn't be against it. Like, I wouldn't be against doing like places like the Attic, you know, in Tampa. I would love to play the Attic. I think that's a great venue.
We'll start working on that for you.
I would love that. The Hideaway mm-hmm. in St. Pete. And I've played the Hideaway, and they're such good people. And their room is so comfortable. It's homey, you know. And I feel like that's what the Attic's like, or Heartwood in Gainesville. Heartwood's another mm-hmm. spot that I'm trying to get into. And we play at Blue Jay in Jacksonville. I don't know if you guys played there.
I'm aware of it. We haven't played there.
But you need to check that spot out. Kara at Blue Jay is killing it. It's an amazing room. It's vibes for days.
There's a cool room, another room here, the Palladium Theater.
Yeah.
Downstairs, the side room.
Okay.
Is nice. It's kind of cabaret style.
Oh, all right.
A little bit more capacity than the Hideaway.
Okay.
But they've got a great staff and crew there, and the sound is really good. And
nice.
Yeah. You know.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now all those places. I'm down for kind of anything, man. Really, I've done a lot of touring and I've done a lot of travel that way. I'm not too keen to get into a van for 3 months.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Not real. You know, at this point in my life, 30 years old with a wife that I really enjoy hanging out with, I don't necessarily want to be gone that much. But, you know, I'm open to a long weekend, you know, and go get as far as we can in a van or fly somewhere and come back. And I love house concerts. House concerts are my jam. Mm-hmm. So I did my last record I released in 2016, and I did, it was called Coming Home. And I did a tour of house concerts called the Coming to Your Home Tour. and that was all I did for like 2.5 weeks, was go to people's living rooms. And it was the best. It was just the very best. So I'm eager to do that again. I'm doing a house concert run in Texas in April that I'm really excited about, through Dripping Springs and through some friends. So
you get lost in Texas. I mean, it's its own
dude. I love me some Texas now. Yeah. If you've never toured out there, have you ever spent any time in Texas?
Some, but not a ton, not enough.
Oh man, it's in the water there too. It's rejuvenating. It's good for your soul.
It's each part of Texas is so different. There's a lot of things that bind it together. There's it's a like lot Florida. Of different parts of Texas. For sure. I mean, that's true of a lot of states, but Texas is so big and sprawling.
Yeah.
And the terrain changes so much. I mean, Florida's mostly swamp.
Yeah. At no point in Florida can you not see 50 miles one direction. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right. You're very right. In Texas, at least you get into like the hill country and you're like, am I standing in a Norman Rockwell painting? Like, it's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I grew up about 20 minutes from here. So.
What about you?
I grew up about 40 minutes from here.
Yeah, we're both Florida boys.
All right, nice. Yeah. Crackers in the home.
That's
crackers.
Correct.
Yep. Three crackers.
Three, yeah.
Three of them.
In a Florida cracker style home.
Yep, box of crackers. So I think diverting from,
like, diverting from a box of crackers. Moving on.
Snack foods.
Where's the cheese?
So you touch on something that's, you know, is an important thing that we come up upon in here. But the dream of going out on tour as a musician, it doesn't hold the same lore that it once did for a lot of people, because I think there's something you said. We're talking to Lydia today. Lydia's just got back from a tour in Germany.
Man.
And for everybody that's confused about who Lydia Luce is, go back, listen to her episode if you haven't. She's amazing.
Oh,
go check out her stuff.
Do yourself a favor.
She's about to go out on another tour. She was flying from
West
St.
Coast.
Pete to the West Coast. She's, I think, in San Fran. They're doing another run of shows.
Nice. Good for her.
She's grinding it out, you know?
By the way, she does, from time to time, she hosts house concerts in Nashville. So.
Well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
that's
she
recorded.
She fronts the Lachlan Strings. So as a celloist.
That.
Yeah, so definitely some connections. Definitely you guys need to keep in touch. But I think, you know, interested in, certainly gave a little bit of your take, but just what your vibe is from other musicians that you're talking to. Like, it's the more we talk to people, it's like being a songwriter, publishing company, like, and if you don't, like, crave performing, that's it. Because your stuff's getting realized, it's getting played, you're getting to write songs for a living, and you don't have to grind it out. You just go home every night at a normal time generally, and... But it depends on what you want and what you strive for. And, you know, you are a musician who has a huge vocabulary of musical skill compared to other people that have not gone to music school, that haven't picked up cello or another string instrument, or just playing guitar as they've picked it up through tabs, you know?
Right.
And so what the world and the opportunities for a musician look like to somebody who's got that vocabulary, to somebody who doesn't, are different. But were you sitting there going, like, I have this dream of being a touring musician?
Yeah,
and are you still?
I did, you know, I very much did. I think we all dream of the seeing your name in lights and jumping up on a big stage. And at some point in your life, maybe not long, but
it's having people sing your song that you did something that meant something to somebody
else. Oh, that you touched
else.
That many people.
Yeah, a connection in that way.
Without a doubt. I always wanted to tour as a guitar player. I always wanted to be a member of Green Day. Like, that was my dream. I learned everything that Green Day ever did. And I wanted the camaraderie, I think, more than anything else. Playing a classical instrument while you're in an orchestra is a community. It's a very lonely existence because you're in a practice room for 6 hours a day by yourself, just grinding it out. And trapped in a room like that with nothing but an instrument and your thoughts is not conducive to good thoughts.
And that's just what it takes to stay competitive.
Well, that's what that's what it takes to get good at those instruments. They're hard instruments, you know what I mean? They're just difficult. And any of those, flute's one of the hardest dang instruments I've ever seen. I played clarinet once and I made it sound like a dying goose. And I was like, okay, I can't do this. This isn't for me, you know? But I always wanted to do it. I always loved the romantic aspects of, you know, let's go to the road. Let's get in a van. Let's eat dinner at a truck stop.
I mean, there is a romance there is to a romance the road, to it, the the unknown, what's coming next, and having a destination too.
Absolutely, and it's the journey. I mean, it's rarely the destination. It's the token. You're driving on a highway at sunrise, and you're seeing the sun rise over a cornfield. You know, that's that view of seeing the golden hour at 80 miles an hour.
Opportunities just over the next horizon.
Yeah, it's right there. It's beautiful. You know, and what's more American than that?
Like, sure.
But for me, like I did, you know, I did some touring when I was in Florida, just regional touring, and it quickly realized that, you know, when you get into the car and you're in the car for 6 hours and the car stops and you're like, okay, where are we? And they're like, welcome to Valdosta. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh man, this is not what I thought it was.
Totally. You know, though I will defend Valdosta. We played with Colonel Bruce Hampton.
Oh, really? Oh, I bet that was awesome.
And there's only like two bars in the whole city, and the college empties out basically into those two bars.
Right.
It's a Mellow Mushroom and a Charlie O'Corley's. We played the Charlie O'Corley's multiple times. Some of the most fun I've ever had on stage. But of the town,
I crashed in a Mazda 3 in the Moe's parking lot every time I drove through there. And it was... You know, it's cool once. You know? It's cool. Yeah, I slept in my car last night.
And it was a stretch.
I'm an artist, you know?
This is mostly cool.
At some point, you're like, I really want a bed.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then I had a really cool thing happen. I played for a really big band for a very short period of time. And it was eye-opening. It was tour buses and planes, and it was like a big... production where you had a guitar tech and, you know, you showed up and your stuff was in tune. And
is this the Beach Boys?
Yeah. And it was this whole deal, you know, and that was a whole other thing. And as soon as that was over, I went back to driving in my Civic or in my Mazda. And it was, I think the beauty and romance of it kind of wore off very quickly for me there when I was like, okay, well, I have to drive the next 4 hours or I have to sleep in my car tonight. So take your pick, you know? And then I got really into logistics, and I got really into like, okay, I can do this. This is the time I have to be there. This is, you know, and I can map it out a little differently than that. But I think the touring songwriter thing is so lonely. If it was with a band, I feel like it would be better in some regards. It'd be worse in others, but I feel like the camaraderie makes that a lot more doable. 'Cause I don't want to be trapped in a car by myself for 10 hours at a time. Like that sucks.
It's an interesting thing too. I mean, I have this discussion with songwriters, certainly just other people in relationships. Going and experiencing that sunrise over the cornfield is really cool by yourself once. But then you want to share it with somebody.
Yeah.
Like, and I have this analogy, if you can call it an analogy, but like, I feel like with experience like that, the camera's running, but there's no film in it. And you need somebody else there with you to be the film, you know? So it's like somebody else to validate that memory happened and like to share it again. And like, that's what keeps it alive. Like that thing that was important that you shared with somebody else, and that's what propels it forward and it gets to stay in existence because of it. Because otherwise, to your point, you're left in a room for 6 hours with an instrument running, whether it really happened or not.
Right. And it's, you lose your perspective. You lose all sense of perspective. Yeah, that's Traveling Alone. Is that the Jason Isbell tune?
There you go.
You know, that's it. You know, I've been this way 1,000 times. I know that this is a really beautiful drive. Whoop-a-dee-doo.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. But in that same feeling to me is why I think for me, and I don't want to project onto you, but
do it.
But I think, you know, going back to playing your songs and having people clap for you and say, I get it.
Validation,
I get it, man. You had validation. Shit, okay. And you're like, yes, okay. That thing that I felt and was cathartic.
Worth the drive.
I thought was worth something or meant something. These people agree, and therefore I can continue to live amongst humans.
Yeah. I may say I'm worth it. I'm worth it.
That's really, that's funny. Yeah. So what are you looking forward to? What's coming up? You mentioned a CD release party.
That's pretty much the next. The getting this record done. We're five songs in. Vocals are done on everything, on five songs. Everything else is already done. And then we go into adding some, I guess, like auxiliary percussion, and then some, we do mixing, stage, and mastering, and then, you know, just trying to get it out in January. And
so, self-funded?
Where are you doing?
Self-funded, yeah. I had a couple help, just personal friends.
Yeah.
Singing.
Where are you recording?
We recorded the drums and the acoustics at Shoebox Studios in Nashville. And Shoebox is a really lovely little space off Nolensville that the good people from the St. Louis Cardinals own. And it was a, it's just a killer. It's got a Neve console in it, and it's a beautiful sounding room. And I highly recommend it. If you get up there and need to do some work, it's great.
Better than Cracker Box Studios.
Hey. I'm working with Sean Byrne as my producer, and Sean Byrne is actually an immensely talented songwriter, guitar player, musician, producer, engineer. I met him at Dripping Springs. So I met him in 2016 in Dripping Springs. We saw him again at 2015 I met him in Dripping Springs. In 2016 I met him again, and then I saw him some point. I moved, and it turns out that I'm like walking distance from his house, like the smallest world. He lives up the hill from me. Mm-hmm. And so now I do cello sessions for him. Whenever he has an artist over that needs cello, he just calls me, and I literally walk.
One question we always ask everybody that we haven't asked you yet, and I feel like we need to definitely get in before we wrap here. Are you a lyrics first, a music first, or a title first songwriter?
I'm a yes songwriter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's allowed.
So Just Like Us came from an image, right, of seeing those people, and it started from that spot.
So we'll call that a prompt, a title.
Sure. It came from the... Okay, I can see that. It came from a title. We'll call it a title. Broken In came from a hook, came from a title. Darken His Soul, the song you were asking about earlier, I didn't land on that hook until I got to that hook. And... Mm-hmm. And even then, it never felt like a strong hook. It still doesn't feel like a strong hook. But I know that the song's done, so I don't bother with it.
And when you say a strong hook, a strong lyrical hook, idea hook.
Yeah, like the thing that pulls it all together, you know what I mean? And makes the listener go, oh, resolve. You know, I feel good. There's a thing called antecedent consequence where you set up that. You set up the anticipation from your listener, and then you finally pay it off late, mm-hmm. you know. And that hook is that it should be a moment for your listener. And Darkness Soul isn't necessarily that, but I don't care. It's my song, and I wanted it to.
I think it's a great song.
I think it's a great tune too. Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, man.
I don't know if you have any voice left.
I'll try it. Screw it.
I have an appetite for songs that have a lot of mystery in them and don't necessarily resolve, you know, at all the prescribed moments.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of happy resolve in the two that you played. A lot of the other stuff you heard, this one's got more, there's a lot of minor feel in it, you know. And there is, I don't want to, so on the nose of the title, but it's a darker feeling song.
And I think the progression, this is one of those that we were talking about, how the progression can dictate a lot of ways. This song came from, it started with a musical idea. It started from, and this is how I used to write a lot, was just sitting and tinkering with stuff musically until something came out, you know. Mm-hmm. So for this one, it was going... So playing around that image, and then it came to the line and everything. But if I didn't do it like that, it would end up being like... which isn't bad, but it's not as... I don't think it's as strong. It's mm-mm. just a personal preference.
Anyway. But it does have the satanic chord in it.
It doesn't have the satanic chord. This one does. Actually, it does.
It does.
Right. It does. Son of a... All right.
That's why I respond to it, maybe.
The beast.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think it's satanic at all. I think it's tension and mystery, and I don't think that's satanic.
Amen to that.
I think it's real life.
Hey, my man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. It's called Dark in His Soul.
rain on the windshield, heading somewhere new. I always keep it moving, it's all I can do. Smoke on my fingers, a fire on my lips, yeah. We're headed down on a one-way south on 126. I found you when I hit rock bottom in an old bean bottle, and I found myself weary about which way to go. Ain't it true that you can lead a man to water, but you can't take him farther unless he's ready to face the dark in his soul? Fear fills my heart up, shaken as a light. Got everything I want here, everything but time. And hands cold as winter, haze all around me. Seeing life through a vignette light, it's pulling me down, down, down. I found you when I hit rock bottom in an old bean bottle, and I found myself weary about which way to go. Ain't it true that you can lead a man to water, but you can't take him farther unless he's ready to face the dark in his soul? Found you when I hit rock bottom in an old bean bottle, and I found myself weary about which way to go. And ain't it true you can lead a man to water, but you can't take him farther unless he's ready to face the dark in his soul? Found you when I hit rock bottom in an old bean bottle, and I found myself weary about which way to go. And it's true that you can lead a man to water, but you can't take him farther unless he's ready to face the dark in his soul. So unless he's ready to face the dark in his soul, I'm not ready to face the dark in my soul. Should I end it major or minor?
Ooh, major.
There it is. A happy resolve.
Heck yeah, man.
Sell out.
Sell out. How about major, minor? Or minor, we could do minor, major. What is that?
Yeah.
Let's
minor,
see.
Major, seven.
Yeah, minor, major, seven. So we're at the end of that. This will be weird. This will feel real weird.
We like to end these weird.
That's the one.
That is weird.
That's the one I wanted to hear.
That's the one? I don't know.
Cool. Brian, thanks so much for being here, man.
Man, thank you guys so much.
Thanks for sharing your tunes with us. Thanks for doing it on, you know, what, 5 gigs over the last 3 days?
Let's see. Friday, 1, Saturday at 9 a.m., Saturday afternoon, Saturday late, today at 1, today at 2:30.
Six.
So this is,
if you count this,
this
is
the 7th, yeah. And then I played on Broadway till 11 o'clock Thursday night before I flew down. So
you're a trooper, man. Thanks for doing
nice work.
We love
man.
Your stuff, man. Yeah. We're looking forward to a release coming out.
Yes. Yeah, man. I'll send you guys a copy, and you guys better be there.
We'll be there, man.
We're going to be there. Yeah.
We'll be pumping it out, too, man.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I love that.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. Bye.
You've been listening to Song Divers.
Thank you for supporting us and our sponsors and all the great independent music makers out there trying to make their way in the music business these days.
As good as I've ever been, hear me settling. Little table in the back, here we go again. Slow kissing neath the neon flickering. We could stay all night. Cause girl, you know I'm good if you are. Can bet the night on two hearts.
Songs we heard in this episode were Get the Chance to, Just Like Us, Broken In, Dark in His Soul, and Good If You Are. All from Brian's forthcoming new album, now slated for a March 2020 release.
Hear more of Brian and stay up to date on his upcoming release by following him on the social medias. He's at Brian Suth on Instagram, that's BRIANSUTH, and on his website, SutherlandSongs.com, SUTHERLAND Songs.com. And if you're in or headed to Nashville and looking for someone to point you in the right musical direction, or better yet, lead your band, get in touch with Brian to see if he's got time to add some of his musical or lyrical magic to the song you're working on right now. And you'll be able to hear even more of him soon. But in the meantime, listen to him on Spotify, iTunes, and everywhere you get your music. If you have a heartbeat, you'll dig his catalog, whether you're from the Northeast, the Southeast, or the Sutherland. But I couldn't help myself.
I'm right here waiting, baby, know I'm good if you are.
How's the voice feel after 17 gigs in 2 hours?
Fantastic.
Good.
No, I am...
do have whiskey, if that would help.
You know, I don't think... I don't know
if you need any more.
I have tried to remedy with whiskey far too much this weekend.
Okay.
I think I'm good on the whiskey remedy. My teeth are numb, so that's good.
Song Divers is a production of Ybor City Records and recorded in the historic Kenwood District of St. Petersburg, Florida.